We'll be starting the conference call in a few minutes, so please hold on.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. So please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chimincha, Tati Terua, Alephet Gimel Yudtav Sadi, and the letters Zion and Bet. The phrase connects us to the with its gematria 506, it connects us to unconditional love, ahavatinam. And the ayin, which created the constellation Gedi, which is the youthful goat, the young goat, or the Capricorn, and the bet that created the planet Shabtai, the planet Saturn. Together, their gematria is 72, and it connects us to the 72 names of God and the 72 names from the Tzaddikim, and many other levels of wisdom associated with the number 72. Kaberinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora kufrei shayin sintet nun. These letters spell the phrase Prasatan, Teret Satan. They also can be rearranged to spell Sha'ar Katan, meaning small gates, and reminds us to guard our gates, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth, which are the entry points for the negative system. Nagibor Dor She'yehudcha Yevavat Shamlem. Then Gimel Dalet, Yud Kaf Shin. Then Gimel Dalet connects us to, through its gematria 57, connects us to Parnassah, sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that lets us take back the energy we've given to the negative side through our mistakes. Barchem Taharem Rachame Sidkatcha Dami Damlem Betet Reish Tzadi Tav Gimel. This sequence connects us to the Sephira of Netzach, eternal victory. Chasin Kadosh Hiro Tuvcha Na'el Adatach Tet Kufet Tet Nunayan. This sequence of letters connects us to the Sphira of Hod, which is appreciation. Yachid Geyeh Lamcha Pene Zofrei Kedushatach Yud Gimel Lamed Hezayim Kuf. This sequence helps feed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium, which is also our generation. Shabbatenu Kabel Yishmati Akatenu Yehudeya Talumo Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Tav. The first two letters of this sequence has a gematria of 400, which represents a complete structure of four worlds within 10 sephirot, within 10 sephirot. And the last four letters have the gematria like the first verse of 506 and connect us to unconditional love. And it's through the process of injecting unconditional love that we can attain perfection, that we can attain completion. Completion will always be perfection. If something is not yet perfect, it is not yet complete. And the last verse we say in a whisper. I'm going to read from the Zohar now. A verse from the Parasha of Shemot. Shemot is the first portion in the book of Exodus. And the Western Bible calls it Exodus because it's talking about the story, of the physical level of the story. The Hebrew calls it Shemot, which means names. And that's because it starts with a listing of the 12 tribes, but it also has within the book of Shemot the revelation of the 72 names of God. And I'm reading section 5, which is three who reject the Shekhinah. Vayihi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'aseh yedeinu kodenei aleinu ma'aseh yedeinu kodeneihu. Veshei amadi yadu velo nifu bidaihu. Et anshu bekad meka vikiv kach et bo rashei. Ha'am v'choka otam le'Hashem neged ha'shemesh rebi Abba Amar. My neged ha-shemesh, neged ha-brit v'ikre shemesh v'alei itmar, ki shemesh v'magen ha-shem Elohim. The leaders of the people who know this and do not protest are punished first, as it is written, take all the chiefs of the people and hang them up before Hashem against the sun. Rabbi Abba said, what is meant by against the sun? It means against the covenant that is called sun, of which it is said, for Hashem Elohim is a sun and shield. A sun and shield is the holy covenant. In the same way that the sun shines and illuminates the world, the holy covenant shines and illuminates the body of man. In the same way that a shield protects the man, so does the holy covenant protect the man. And there is no injury that can approach one who protects it. This is against the sun. The verse is explaining a difficulty in one of the verses of Tehillim and also in the verse here, where it's talking about putting something against the sun and what is that actually meaning. And it's talking about energy levels and consciousness levels having to do with the Yesod, having to do with the channel that brings everything from the upper world into our world. And it also takes everything up from our world back up to the upper worlds. And the sun is the representation of that. The sun is Tiferet, and Yesod is the lower level. The Yesod is the sexual organs, but they're all very much connected and unified. And understanding the relationships is part of what we're going to start to teach tonight in the four phases. Before I go on, does anybody have any questions?
No, I'm okay. Anyone else here?
I don't think yet. It's so we'll just continue. The four phases is the deepest study of Kabbalah. It's the entryway to the Tree of Life. There are many other spiritual paths who speak of the Tree of Life. Some of them have become very corrupted, as we know. The people out of England, Carruthers and the rest of them in the 30s of last century, you know, and they admitted later that they actually corrupted the information on purpose. know, one of them was a schizophrenic. Alistair Crowley. Anytime you read books or have it referred to Alistair Crowley, you know that it's corrupted.
Yeah, he was weird.
Yeah, truly. So the idea, Rabbi Ashlag is the only Kabbalist who teaches the four phases. Others refer to it, hint at it, but Rabbi Ashlag is the one who has brought it into our level. And it's very clear in his teachings and in his writings. And it's very important. If you don't understand the four phases, you're going to limit your learning in the rest of your study in Kabbalah. So this is the kind of course, there's probably four, sometimes three classes, sometimes five classes. We listen to them constantly. They will help you throughout your life. Because the real issue of the four phases is understanding the creative process. And when you understand the creative process, you understand where you are in the creative process. And the creative process is creation, but it's also our lives. When we were born, what we are here to do. It's all related to the creative process. So there are basically three metaphors that we will use and three sets of vocabulary. And I'll try not to jump back and forth too often, but it's helpful and it's important that you know these vocabulary. So the first metaphor is the Tetragrammaton itself. The four letters of the Tetragrammaton. Why are there four letters? There's five worlds, as we've talked about very briefly in earlier classes. There are five worlds, so why are there only four letters? And two of those letters, the top, upper He and the lower He, are the same letter. So how do we understand that? And that's also part of a very necessary part of the creative process. The other vocabulary, the other metaphor that we will use is the tree of life itself.
Sounds like TNT.
Say again?
It sounds like what I've read or, you know, observed about DNA. It's like repeats, isn't it?
Right.
Like this. It's like the same thing.
And the question you haven't asked, but should be asked, is why are there four letters in DNA? And it's connected directly to the four letters of the Tetragrammaton, and it's directly connected to the four phases that we're going to be teaching you. So yes, you're right. It is DNA is definitely part of the four phases, but you're going to start to see the four phases in everything around you, because everything that is created is dealing with the four phases. But we have to remember that we are in a process. So the process, which starts as a metaphor with the bud of a tree, but until it reaches its completion, when it's a juicy piece of fruit that we're really, you know, salivating for, that piece of fruit, until it becomes a piece of fruit, where is it in the process? Is it at the beginning of the process, the middle of the process, the end of the process? Where in the four phases is it? Because it is a creative process to grow from a bud into a fruit. It is a creative process in our life to grow from a child to an adult. So that's these two metaphors, and I haven't really completed the metaphor of the tree of life, but just to give review. We have 10 sephirot. Six of those sephirot are looked at as one item. So So the 10 Sephiroth, Keter, Hoffman, Bina, Chesed, Geburah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, Malchut. And there are times when we need to see the creative process in the frame of all 10. But most of the time, the metaphor of the four phases will suffice. And when we're looking at it from that perspective, we talk about five levels. We talk about Keter, Chokhma, Bina, Zeranpin, which consists of the six, Chesed, Geburah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. And then the last phase being Malchut. So we talk about five, Keter, Chokhma, Bina, Zeranpin, and Malchut. So the first understanding, the first description of phase one. Phase one includes Keter and Chokhma. It includes the Yud of the Tetragrammaton. Phase one, let me step back one second because I didn't tell you, and it's important to realize this. In all of creation, there has only been one thing created. One and only one thing, and that's desire. The purpose of the creative process was to create desire, because the thought of creation, which is I want to be revealed, coming from the Creator. I want to be revealed, says the Creator, and when he had this thought, there was a vessel created. But that vessel goes through a process, step by step, through four phases. Because you cannot have desire without going through these four phases. And that is essentially the strength of Rabbi Ashlag's description, and the awesomeness of the description. Rabbi Ashlag basically said, phase one consists of the Yud. The tip of the Yud is Keter. The rest of the Yud, the body of the Yud, is Chokhma. Phase one is a simple conversation between the fulfillment, which the Kabbalists call light, and the vessel. And the conversation goes like this. Knock, knock. I want to be revealed. And the vessel says, okay, I'll reveal you. You're invited in. There's no desire in that statement. There's no effort in that statement. It's, I'm not afraid of you. I'm not concerned about you. Come on in. You want to be revealed, I'll reveal you. But there's no true desire in that statement and in that conversation. But the conversation is important because there's no coercion in spirituality. So the vessel has to be asked. It has to agree. What if the vessel said, no, I won't let you in. Don't come in. I don't want to reveal you. What would have happened? It's not the nature of the vessel. Now, this is in the process of the creative process. So the vessel isn't yet a desire. But even so, the nature of the vessel is to receive. And inherently, essentially, it knows that it needs to receive. So it's impossible that the vessel would have said, no, don't come in. But we now have a vessel. We have a vessel that has been fulfilled by the light. There's no desire there. There's just light and vessel in unity together. This is the nature of the endless world. But in the endless world, all four phases exist. and the process of cause and effect, which we will go through as we explain these phases, that process of cause and effect is necessary in order to achieve the creation of desire, and also the creation of every other aspect of desire. And everything that we do in our lives relates to these four phases, and we'll come to understand that. So the vessel said, come on in, and the light came in. And they are in unity. There's no space inside the vessel empty of the fulfillment, empty of the light. Every space, every nook, every cranny, even the walls of the vessel itself are permeated by the light, by the fulfillment. There's no opportunity for the vessel to be in lack. It's fulfilled. This is the nature of the Yud. This is the Yud has the smallest letter in the Hebrew alphabet. It has the gematria of 10, representing completion, the 10 sphirot. There's no desire there, but there is wisdom there. Why is there wisdom there? Because the light is there. And wherever the light is, there's wisdom. Now, what is this phase? What is this whole issue? We're going to use a metaphor of a coffee cup. And the coffee cup asks, or its essence is it wants to serve man. But if it's empty, it can't share anything. But if it's filled with coffee, it's perfect. It's doing its job. It's available to be drunk by a human being, to be consumed by a human being. I don't mean drunk as in alcohol. So the vessel is fulfilled. But the vessel just was sitting there. It didn't do anything to draw the light. It didn't do anything to make it happen. It just is. But there's a funny nature, a funny aspect, and it's always true. The nature of a vessel is to take on what fulfills it, to start to become that nature. So in the coffee cup, you put hot coffee into the cup, and eventually, a few minutes later, the cup is going to become warm. You put cold tea and iced tea into the cup, and the cup will become cool. It starts to take on the nature of what fulfills it. Now, we have discussed way back in our first class, our second class, we have discussed that the nature of the light is to share. So now we have this cup, or this vessel, this phase one vessel, that is fulfilled. And it starts to take on the nature of the light, of what fulfills it. And that nature is sharing. And somehow the vessel has the consciousness, I want to share. Now that is a different conversation between light and vessel than the first conversation. That is essentially a different phase, a new vessel. It's a vessel that says, I want to share. Does it have a desire to share? It's not truly desire yet. But for lack of better terms in English, we'll speak of it in terms of a partial desire. I want to share, says the vessel. Now, is it the same coffee cup? Is it the same vessel? In spirituality, consciousness defines vessels. Consciousness defines everything. If you have the same consciousness as someone else, then it is said you are in unity. You are in affinity. You are in love. If you don't have that same consciousness, then you are separated from that other vessel, that other person. It may not be separated in physical distance, but you're separated in spiritual distance. And that's a very big rule in the spiritual worlds. Something that is in affinity with another thing is said to be close. Something that is separated from the other is said to be distant. And what separates? A different consciousness. So we have this very simple consciousness change from phase one that says, come on in, light, to phase two that says, I want to share. We now have two vessels, but actually it's the same vessel. How can it be the same vessel? There's two different consciousness. There is no disappearance in spirituality. This is a rule that you've heard, an adage you've heard, but you don't really appreciate it until you start talking about the four phases. Because the vessel is different, but it's the same vessel. Phase one never disappears. Hold on 1 second. Phase one never disappears. Phase two comes into existence. The consciousness of the vessel changes. So phase two comes into existence, but phase one never disappears. And that's something that's always important to remember, because we're going to talk about in our world, where are you in phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four? Where are you? Where is your consciousness? And this is the amazing part of Rabbi Aschlag's teaching, is to recognize that the vessel doesn't change, but yet it does change. And that's the paradox that is associated with the whole concept of tsimtsum. If you'll remember, tsimtsum means the light withdrew into itself. But the light is everywhere. There's no place where there is no light. So how can there be an empty space of light? How can it withdraw into itself? And it's a difference in consciousness, but it's the same vessel. The light is still there. It never disappears. Phase one, light says, I want to be revealed. The vessel says, okay, I'll reveal you. Come on in. Phase two says, I've taken on the nature, the aspect of the fulfillment, the aspect of the light. I want to share. This is the nature of phase two. It's a vessel. Because it says the word I. I means vessel. The word I that is used in the Torah that refers to God It's, he says it in the first word of the Esser Dibrot, of the ten utterances. He says, Anochi. But that's not the word for I in Hebrew. Well, if you ask the Hebrew speaker, he'll tell you, of course it is, but it's biblical. We don't use it today. But the truth is, it's not the same word. The word for I in Hebrew is Ani. Aleph Nun Yud. Coincidentally, and we know there's no coincidence, the word I, Ani, is exactly the same letters of En, nothingness, endless. I. When God says it, he says Anochi. It is not the same as when you and I say I. When we say I, we are talking about vessel. The consciousness of a vessel is said from our ego that says I. There's a philosopher, Descartes, and he has a very famous statement, and I'll probably blow it and paraphrase it incorrectly, but I believe he says, I think, therefore I am. And in Kabbalah, we disagree with that statement. You come into existence without thinking. The first word in his statement, I, means existence. It means consciousness. It means separation. Phase two is a different consciousness from phase one. Phase two is a consciousness of I want to share. What is the nature of I want to share? Why does that separate you from phase one? It doesn't. You're the same vessel. If you were in the physical world, the coffee cup would just transition to a pouring range, or a, you'd pick it up and put it to your mouth. Phase one is the coffee in the cup. Phase two is the coffee in you. Was there a transition from one phase to the other? Yes, you had to lift it up and put it to your mouth. That makes it a different vessel in spirituality. Now that's an overwhelming consciousness change. It's an amazing revelation from Rabbi Ashlag. So we have phase one, a simple conversation between the light and the vessel. The light says, I want to be revealed. The vessel said, okay, I'll reveal you, come on in. And then we have a simple cause and effect process. Because the light is in the vessel, that's the cause, the vessel becomes something else. I want to share. Cause and effect. Does it happen simultaneously? In essence, it does. It doesn't take time to go from come on in, to I want to share. It doesn't take time. It takes a process. What is the process? Just the essence of the light permeating the vessel. Cause and effect. What is the cause? The cause is always fulfillment. The cause is always light. Phase two is a vessel. But it says, its consciousness, I want to share. Whom is it going to share with? Can it share back to the light? Not really. The light has no desire. The light has no empty space. The light has nothing it lacks. The light is just the light. It never changes. It is always there, always unchanged. The language that is used to describe it is simple, pure light. Why do they say simple? Because light is simple. It's undifferentiated. One aspect of light and another aspect of light in the frame of light are the same. One aspect of light to us looks red. Another aspect of light to us looks violet. Another aspect of light to us looks blue. Is the light different? No, it is simple, pure light. It never changes. Phase one never changes. The yud always is fulfilled. The yud is complete. The yud lacks nothing. But phase two, I want to share, is a natural effect of the vessel being fulfilled. That natural effect causes phase two. The light caused phase one to become phase two. It caused the vessel to change. What causes us to change? The light that wants to be revealed causes us to change. If we don't change, we can't reveal a different aspect of the light. From the light's perspective, it's the same. From our perspective, we are different. We are new. We are a different vessel. One of the aspects of our physical world is being different, making change. We change. Why do we change? Because we have a lack. The vessel in phase two has a lack. It wants to share. It wants to share means it's not being fulfilled anymore. This is a different consciousness. This is the process that starts cause and effect. Why is the top part of the yud Keter? Why is Keter not Chokhmah? And this is something that's a little deep, and it really doesn't go into in the four phases, but we have the time right now, and it's good to know it. In our solar system, a couple hundred years ago, or 150 years ago or so, some telescope, through an aberration in gravity, said that there has to be a planet out there, and that planet has to have a cycle of 248 years. And let's find it. And eventually they did, and they called that planet Pluto. And they said it's a planet. And today, about a year ago, or two or three years ago, or maybe in the 90s, I forget when, scientists had a convention, because they get paid to be scientists, and scientists get paid to have conventions. And so they had a convention, and they decided that Pluto is too small to be a planet. Therefore, Pluto isn't a planet. Of course, I and everybody of my generation who grew up in school learning the truth of science knows that Pluto's a planet. Well, it seems that the Kabbalists had the same conflict about Keter. Looking from the bottom up, Keter looks like light, not vessel. It's so far above where we look from that it appears to be that it's light, it's fulfillment. There's no difference between it and the Ein Sof, the endless world. The Keter, the seed level, when we put a seed in the ground, we go to plant an orange tree, a lemon tree, a fruit tree, a wheat plant. We put a seed in the ground. As soon as that seed sprouts and becomes a root, it disappears. It's still there. In fact, the Kabbalists say, in that seed, before we put it into the ground, were all four phases. The seed, the root, the trunk, and the flower was all in the seed. Open the seed, look for all four. They're all there. But they're not there because the seed disappears. As soon as it becomes the root, it disappears. This is the idea that Pluto is not a planet. Is it a planet or it's not a planet? Keter, is it light or is it vessel? This discussion is ongoing with the Kabbalists. They don't understand it. We have 10 Sephirot, always. The Sefer Yetzirah says, the first verses it says, there are 10, not 9. There are 10, not 11. So what happens when Keter isn't counted as a Sephirah? Well, then we count dots. And dot is that dotted circle in the Tree of Life. Dot is, means knowledge. Dot is the restriction between wisdom and understanding. Phase one includes the Keter. It includes the seed, but it's disappeared. We don't sense it. Phase one is, I want to be revealed. Phase one is, all right, I'll reveal you. Are they two separate statements? Yes. Are they two separate consciousnesses? No. And this is why we are taught that in the Yud, the top of the Yud, the crown of the Yud, the first little bit of ink on the paper is the Keter. It's there, but concealed. The rest of the Yud is Chokhmah, is wisdom, is the totality of the fulfillment. It's all there. And the fact that the vessel said, come on in, allows the vessel to be a co-creator with the light. Because what happened? What happened was an automatic process of cause and effect. The light came in, the vessel took on the nature of the light. Who is the cause? Well, obviously the light is the cause. But if I say to Wendy, go, please go turn on the light in this room, and she walks over to the wall switch and flips it, and the light comes on. And now we ask the question, who caused the light to come on? Was it Wendy who did the action, or Hanoch who made the request? Cause and effect.
Egg.
I'm sorry?
A chicken and the egg, which came...
No. You can't go there, because the Kabbalists have an answer. We know what comes first, the chicken or the egg, and so do you. The egg comes from the seed. The egg is the seed. You cannot have had a chicken without first having a seed, without first having the Keter. So which came first? Me asking you to turn on the light, or you turning on the light? Obviously, me asking you. The light said, let me in. That's the level of Keter. The vessel, by saying yes, also becomes a Keter. It starts the process. Without the vessel saying yes, there can be no revelation. There can be no fulfillment, because there could be no coercion in spirituality. This is the nature of cause and effect. In the process, something we call the process, which we haven't ever discussed, but the terms are direct light and returning light. Restriction is from the level of Malchut. It's from the level of manifestation. Manifestation has no light of its own. But the only way you can turn on the light, you can reveal the light, is for the vessel to say no, to do restriction. For the resistor in the electric light bulb to push the electron back. For us to go against our nature, which is what restriction is all about. What that does is start the Keter of returning light. That Keter sends the light all the way back up to Keter, and then it will flow down into Malchut. It's now acceptable to Malchut. It's been veiled by restriction so that Malchut can accept it. Cause and effect. We have discussed phase one. We have discussed briefly phase two. We'll talk a lot more about it next time. But the essence of phase two, I want to share. There has to be something to share with. The change from phase one to phase two is not a conscious change. It happens. Desire is always a conscious change, and we will talk about that in the coming weeks. Does anybody have any questions?
Then do we create with desire? I'm getting ahead, I suppose.
No, and even if you were, that's fine. You're not getting ahead. It's a valid question. Creation, there was only one thing that was ever created, and that's desire. There was other forms. Desire is manifest, is manipulated, it is formed into different aspects. I have a desire to receive that is different than your desire to receive. How do I know that it's a different desire to receive? Because in the physical world, we are separated. We can't have the same consciousness and be separated in the physical world. We would come together in unity. Now, maybe not physically, but in our mind, in our consciousness, we would come together if we had the same desire. There are different forms. The four worlds. The world of emanation, which means going out from myself. The world of creation, and the only thing that was ever created is desire. The world of formation, where the desire is formed into different aspects, and the world of action. our physical world. These names are not chosen lightly by the Kabbalists. They're very important, very clear, and very necessary for us to understand them. But it starts with the understanding of cause and effect, which is the four phases. Phase one caused phase two. The light of fulfillment in phase one caused the vessel to change. But the vessel said, come on in. And so it allowed itself to be caused to change. And therefore, it is part of the creative process. One without the other cannot happen. It's a very big lesson in our life. Can we force another human being to do something? Well, if we look through our history, we have a lot of people trying to do that. Does it work? Well, it seems to work for an instant, maybe 10 years till the guy dies, maybe 10 years until the slave revolts, maybe 10 years until the student becomes an adult. Can we force another human being to do anything? This is one of the things we learn from phase one. No. Disappearance in spirituality, no coercion in spirituality. Therefore, what do we do? How do we live our life? I want you to help me do this. It's much easier for me to scream at you and have you come over and do it. Will you turn on the light if I screamed at you, Wendy? Probably not.
I probably go, well, if you say so, you'd say something back.
But you understand the point I'm making. We have to learn how to request, how to be a catcher. Please and thank you is taught to the two-year-old. Why? Why does everybody teach please and thank you? And then you find out in Hebrew there's no word for please. I use the word slicha, but slicha deals with cleansing. It doesn't mean please. But it's used in that same context as please. So there is a word.
Yeah, in French, it's s'il vous plaît, but that means if it pleases you.
Exactly.
It's gentler in English. I always thought it was kind of forceful. I never liked the word please.
And I can appreciate what you're saying. And it's part of the learning. What is about the nature of the English people who speak English, versus the nature of people who speak French? Is there a difference in their nature? I can tell you there is, because vocabulary defines the person. The words you choose to use defines you. That's one of the reasons and one of the things we learn from the four phases about not swearing. You know, people say that the third Esser Dibrot is do not swear, but that's not what it is. It says do not take the name of the Creator in vain. Do not swear using his name in a false way. That's what it's saying. But for us, do not swear. For us, the words we use define and create the consciousness. This is what's taught in the four phases. It's rather powerful stuff. Any other questions?
No, I think I got it. There's a lot of repetition in there.
Yes, there is. And one of the aspects is I'm taught to give the repetition because it can't be. There's so many clipot blocking the knowledge that even though you heard it once, you have to hear it repeatedly. It says in the Talmud that unless we learn something 101 times, we will not understand it. So I apologize for the repetition, but the repetition is necessary.
Yeah, I got it.
Does the other person want to identify themselves by pressing star 6? Okay, I guess not. Hello?
This is Batya Leiter. I'm listening to this.
How are you, Batya? Batya lives in San Jose, and Wendy lives in Albuquerque, so... If you guys want to exchange emails or phone numbers or whatever between you, just let me know, and I'll facilitate that.
Thank you.
Okay.
And we'll have this class. We'll continue talking about the four phases with phase two next week at 5:30, 6:30 New Mexico time.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll speak to you all. Have a beautiful evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.